Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolfworth. Today's show is an important one for anyone who exercises to keep fit, especially as we move into the warmer months and we're running, hiking, and cycling more. We're talking about injury prevention and recovery. You can avoid a lot of the injuries that come from exertion and overuse with the advice that you're going to hear on today's show. And we'll tell you how to speed your recovery if you do get hurt. For those of us who love the outdoors and enjoy fitness and exercise, this is important information to be able to keep doing what we enjoy. And as with so many things, a lot of it is mental, not physical, as we find ways to have variety, moderation, and to keep a positive attitude that can keep us healthy. My first guest today is a coach who, this is for the part of our discussion about how to prevent injuries. Later on, we're going to talk with somebody who can help you recover from an injury if you haven't followed the advice you're going to hear in the first half. And my guest is Lisa Keller. She is the owner and coach of Multisport Training of Alaska and longtime Anchorage person. In fact, a state champion swimmer from high school in Anchorage a few years ago.
He was a runner, yeah.
Oh, as a runner, okay.
Yeah, as a runner.
Oh, I thought it was a swimmer, okay.
Nope.
But you also coach swimming and cycling. She started doing triathlon in 1984. That was sort of when triathlon was just started getting off the ground.
Yes, it was. Very early days of it.
Yeah, and won the gold nugget in 1999 and also came in fifth at the age of 50, which is pretty a pretty amazing accomplishment.
Yep, I feel really good about that one.
Yeah, yeah. So she could run me into the ground at the slightest intention, but I'm sure she'd be nice enough not to. So, Lisa, tell me about the folks that you work with. What is the span of people you work with in coaching, in running, swimming, and cycling?
Well, I work with all ages and men and women. I probably have a little bit more women overall, maybe like a 60-40 split. Women tend to really enjoy groups specifically, so that's where I see more women. But there's just a real huge benefit to men and women working out as in a group, as you well know, as you've done that.
Yeah, I worked out with Lisa's running group several times, and I was quite impressed with the speed of improvement as opposed to just running by myself. I think that running with a group forces you to run faster.
Absolutely.
Also, the form of the training, I don't know why sort of like do this and then do that. It works, but it seems to work. And also, you know, figuring out the sort of technique and pace and all that makes a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really, I think, a key that people who are trying to improve kind of miss sometimes. So if you look at any online training program, they usually don't show you that piece of training, which is that you have to be running faster, you have to be running at your goal pace for a race and faster in order to improve. But it's also that mix, you know, you can't do that every day. So there's science and art to training.
Yeah, so and it's unusual or it's hard to be a recreational runner and go out the door and sort of go your fastest every day.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have training buddies that I run with and I swim in a group and bike with, and there's just nothing that pushes you and makes you better than working out with other people.
Right.
Because you can't do it on your own.
So you're obviously over 50 because you won the gold nugget at
50.
Yeah,
I'm 52.
And there's lots of people in your groups that are my age, same as yours.
Yep.
I feel like injury is a much bigger concern for me now than it used to be. I need to be a lot more careful.
Yeah, I do have, I would say that because older people just tend to have more time and ability to pay for training, that I probably do skew to an older age group. But I have some people in their 20s in my age group, but I would say like 40s, 50s are probably the most common age that I have in my groups or that I train. But I also have a few athletes that are over 70. So I have a one fantastic female athlete who's like 75. And I have a lot of people who are in, you know, their late 60s as well, who are still performing really well. And it's, again, that training, but it's the application of training. Because as you get older, you do have to be a little bit more careful, and hopefully you're a little bit more smarter, but you do have to be more careful about the way you recover from your activities and the way you balance them.
Yeah. So give us, I mean, and that's just because the body is growing older and is sort of like a little bit more brittle, or what's happening there?
Yeah, I think the physical therapist could definitely talk more to this piece of it. But I think in fact, there's a fantastic book called Fast After 50 by Joe Friel, who's kind of the godfather of triathlon training. And he talks about how to apply training as you get older, but just that the human body, as you get older, just needs more rest. And I think most of us who are older can kind of attest to that, that lots of times we're not getting enough sleep because you're working too much or your sleep is disrupted. Mm-hmm. This is particularly for menopausal women because your sleep gets disrupted quite a bit. And sleep is really super important to recovery. So you really need those big chunks of time to get some good sleep and recover. And I see this happening in my younger clients, too, who have really busy jobs or busy lives with children, that they're just not getting enough sleep. So it just puts you at a higher risk for injury.
So what happens if you don't get that recovery, if you're like running too frequently or not getting enough rest?
Yeah, so you're going to end up perhaps with a chronic injury. And what I see in my clients is, because they do tend to be a lot of type A people who are very driven and have goals that they want to achieve, that when they start to feel something, they don't stop. They just try to push through something. And that seems to be the most common reason why people end up with a chronic injury. I don't see as many acute injuries, things that happen like right at the moment that put you down. It tends to be just this accumulation of fatigue that never gets any rest and gets time to repair. So I tell my clients, like, the most important thing, you got to treat sleep just like it is one of those other activities. It's as important as your swim, as your run, as your bike. You've got to sleep.
Interesting. And I've also heard it, you know, when I was younger, I've never been a great athlete, but I didn't worry about, like, if I worked out, did the same workout 2 days in a row. But now I've often heard, and it seems really true, don't run 2 days in a row.
Right. And actually, that's one of the great things about triathlon. So a typical triathlete is, if they're a fairly decent swimmer, are probably going to swim twice a week, run 3 times a week, and bike 3 times a week. And you try to space all those out so you're not doing 2 in a row. With swimming, you can sometimes do 2 in a row, and biking as well. But with running, never. I never put 2 runs in a row for triathletes or runners.
Mm-hmm.
Although with running, you might have some shorter, easier runs in between those kind of 3 critical run workouts of the week.
So don't run 2 days in a row. Mm-hmm. Put something in between, but lower impact stuff like
right.
cycling and swimming, you could do a lot more of, or skiing, I would think.
Right, skiing, same thing. Yep, mm-hmm. absolutely. Yeah, cross train.
So what is it? It's that impact. It's the hitting the ground that's really causing that stress that
exactly.
will give you the chronic injury.
Yep, there's a lot more stress to your body hitting the ground. One of the things that can be really helpful for runners is to run in the water. So if you have an injury and you can move your workouts into the water, which you can do on time-based and still get the same intensity, that's a really good way to actually put more running into your workout with or into your training schedule, but also to recover from injury if it's an impact-related injury, which most injuries are.
Yeah. So let's also talk about the kind of fitness that you need to build fitness. I mean, everyone's heard about the guy who goes out and, like, from the first day, like, does something crazy and has a heart attack or whatever
yeah.
because he's out of shape. But even for people who've been working out for a while, you can develop problems if you don't have total fitness. And I'm thinking mm-hmm. in particular that you can say you're running and you have got good cardio and you've sort of built up a good base, but you haven't built up your core muscles,
mm-hmm.
maybe you're going to get a sore back or maybe
right.
you're going to break down some other part of your body.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about how you get to where you know you're ready to move to the next level.
Well, it definitely is a progression. And I think this is maybe something that people don't understand too, is that you're not doing the same thing day in, day out all year long. So you're also looking at the big picture, not just the small picture of, oh, I need to get, you know, 8 or 9 hours of sleep every night this week, but also I have a training schedule that is going to build in duration and intensity over the next 6 months to my race. And then I need to take a big chunk of time off.
Hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're like laying on the couch eating bonbons, but you definitely need to scale back. Like after a big triathlon that's long or a long running race, I recommend no running for a week after that. Maybe you can cycle and swim. And then after that, you have to slowly build up your running over the course of however many weeks, depending on the length of the event. So you have periods of time in your training during the year where you have down times, where you're really taking time to recover. One of my training partners and I have talked about this a lot because, you know, we feel like we have longevity in the sport because we've really been able to do that and take time off. And, you know, we kind of joke, we put on a couple pounds and everything, and that happens.
Doesn't
and it's
look
natural.
Like you've done that recently. Look as skinny as you can be.
Well, not quite, but I'm okay. So, but I do go in and out of those periods of time where mm-hmm. I'm just basically, maybe I'm still swimming, maybe I'm doing some snow biking, walking my dog, but I go weeks and weeks and weeks without running. And then when I start again, I start slow. So I don't go out and run for an hour, hour and a half right at the get-go. I start with like 30-minute runs. And of course, if you're starting from a lower level of fitness, you might start only with like a 10 or 15
minute
run.
Right. So you're talking about somebody who's already kind of a pretty dedicated athlete. But I've seen mm-hmm. that you also have people you work with who are, you know, overweight and their sister yep. trying to get into something. And I would think that would be very frustrating from their point of view because they want to like jump up to where they're, you know, burning off the pounds, but they have to be kind of cautious at first, right?
Right. And that's kind of the irony of running is it's like the best calorie burner if you're trying to lose weight. Mm-hmm. But if you're overweight, you have to be really cautious when you start because of those impact forces. Mm. And obviously the heavier you are, the more impact forces you have, the more likely you are to be injured. So to start a new runner, the best way to start is a walk-run program that's very conservative, and you're breaking maybe 30 minutes into 5-minute increments where you might only start with a 4.5-minute walk and a 30-second run, repeating mm-hmm. that 6 times. And then you gradually increase by 30 seconds how much you're running compared to your walking. And that's really the safest way to start. It's the safest way to start after an injury. Super, super hard, as you can imagine, for people who are type A people to start that way. They don't want to.
You
want
to go back to what you used to do.
Yeah, exactly. And then you end up making it worse again.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes kind of a vicious cycle. So as you're in the sport longer, or I should say me personally, I've learned really to listen to my body. And if my body is telling me I'm tired that day, maybe I'm not even feeling any aches and pains, but there's really something going on. I take the day off. And taking 1 or 2 days off to feel better is not going to kill you.
Right.
You're still going to be fine.
Right. As long as it didn't stretch into 1 or 2 weeks off.
Right. That's where it starts to get dangerous for
well,
sure.
Well, I mean, for like you and I think both are people who really enjoy exercising.
Right.
And so, I mean, people say, oh, well, that's so great of you to work out all the time. And like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
That's what I was like saying to somebody who loves watching TV, that they're doing a great job of watching TV.
Right,
it's
right.
just what I enjoy doing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's so true. And not everybody enjoys running. Not everybody enjoys swimming or biking. It's really important overall. It's just to find something you enjoy doing.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it?
That's the key. And if it's you have a dog that you take for a walk, you know, a half hour, 45 minutes a day, that's a start.
And I would also add, try it enough times so that you can get to where you like it, because a lot of sports, I mean, they even keep statistics about this. How many mm-hmm. times you have to try it before it's fun?
Right, exactly.
Not gonna be, you know, nothing's going to be the fun the first time.
It's not. And I tell people, it's not even fun for me sometimes to go out and mm-hmm. do some of these workouts that are difficult, but you never regret it after you're done.
Yeah.
You've done the workout, you feel great afterwards.
Very true.
And that's especially true, I think, like 4 days a week, I get up early to swim on 2 days. And then the other thing which plays into injury prevention also is I go to Elite Sports Performance, which we do sports conditioning in 1 day and more of a power kind of stability, dynamic workout the other day. And I think as an older athlete, that is so important and has really extended my athletic, you know, life much farther. And I feel like actually right now, over the last couple of years since I've been adding that conditioning in, I've been the most stable and injury-free ever.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. It's Outdoor Explorer, and we are talking about injury prevention and recovery. First half is for prevention. So obviously, if you listen very carefully in this half, you can turn off the radio in the second half. Maybe not. And my guest is Lisa Keller. She is the coach of Multisport Training of Alaska and really, really active in the local triathlon scene, doing races, winning races, and helping put on races and coaching lots of people. Let's talk a little bit about sort of the preparation for your workout. Mm-hmm. When I was, you know, younger, that was all about stretching. And then mm-hmm. people said, oh, stretching doesn't do you any good.
Mm-hmm.
which I kind of always felt, you know, mm-hmm. I never really believed in it that much in the first place. And I don't know how folks got, I don't know how these things change so much. It seems like somebody go out and figure it out and give us the right information. But
right. But
tell us how you feel about all that.
I'm not a stretcher. Mm-hmm. And about a year or two ago, I saw a study that validated it and made me very happy. Mm-hmm. And that was that they took two groups of people, took a group that was used to stretching and they had them not stretch. And then they took a group that never stretched and had them stretch. And then they had a control group. And then they looked at them after, I don't know, it was 8 or 12 weeks. And both groups that were doing what they usually don't do had injuries. So the bottom line was, if you're used to stretching, you should stretch. If you're not used to stretching, don't stretch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do what you're used to doing and what your body's used to. Your body is going to tell you if you listen. I think one thing that has really been a great step forward that has really helped me a lot, because I'm not a stretcher, but has been rolling. So to use a roller and get in those tight spots, and I always do that.
So when we talk about a roller, it's like one of those styrofoam kind of cylindrical things,
right.
And you get on it and sort of roll it over the muscle.
And there's like some, I can't remember who makes them, but there's some orange ones that have like, they have like a texture in them too.
Mm.
So the texture kind of changes
as you
roll.
It's almost like a self-massage.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, it's really amazing to get into some tight spots. And so I try to do that before a hard workout, definitely before my conditioning workouts, I roll before and after. And after a hard running workout, I try to roll after a hard run workout and then just as needed after that. But it's pretty amazing, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Warming up, I don't think is optional.
You have to warm up. And that's one thing that I've noticed as I've gotten older. I mean, I was a competitive runner in high school. And I mean, you could go out and you would barely warm up at all,
yeah.
You know, and you could still just do an amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as I've gotten older, I mean, that's the huge joke in my swim lane. I'm the youngest one or the oldest one by far. And it takes me half the workout till I feel I'm really ready to go. So usually my lane mates will lead the first half, and sometimes I can lead the second half because I'm warmed up then.
And what's that all about? I mean, the warming up, obviously if you just go out and start sprinting right away, you're more likely to pull or mess up a muscle. And
right.
For some reason, when it's already got blood rolling through it,
yep.
As you get older, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why it's different between being young and old.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I just maybe think your younger body is more resilient than
yeah.
your older body.
Yeah.
Or it's like an old car. It just takes a while to get
mm-hmm.
going again,
mm-hmm.
you know. And but it definitely, you do have to plan, especially before a hard workout, you have to plan for more warm-up time.
Which means just exercising at a lower intensity level and,
mm-hmm.
and just sort of, but enough so that your heart rate is elevated.
Exactly. So I actually, in my running groups, I have like two separate warm-ups. They warm up at a very low intensity before we gather together and we talk about the workout, and then I send them out on a second warm-up that includes some higher-paced running, some faster-paced running.
Mm-hmm. What about using devices such as compression socks?
Mm-hmm.
Have you found success with those, and do you think those are effective in protecting, you know, from pulled muscles and that sort of thing?
Well, the most recent studies on those is that compression is really great, like after a hard workout, but really doesn't help you during the workout or during the race.
Hmm.
I think, like a lot of things, and this could be for the roller too, a lot of things is that it's a little bit in your head.
Yeah.
And if that works, that works.
It's your magic talisman that'll keep you from getting hurt.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I wouldn't discourage them at all. And definitely I have found, like, after hard workouts, putting those on your calves are just amazing too. And you can kind of almost, you can feel it kind of bubbling. And,
mm-hmm.
and so I think it's another great tool to use.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like this one is probably painfully obvious to everyone but me, but, I've had injuries just because I'm not really paying attention, you know?
Right.
That I'm running for a long time, I'm bored, I'm thinking about something else, suddenly I fall in a hole or twist my ankle or something.
Uh-huh.
So being alert mm-hmm. is important, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it goes beyond that, just that acute type injury that you might get,
mm-hmm.
but also goes to, and I referred to this a little bit earlier about that chronic injury where people ignore symptoms and they
mm-hmm.
ignore and ignore and ignore, or they think they can push through it. And then now you have some injury that's taking maybe 6 months or a year to recover, which is not unusual for some running injuries. You know, running injuries to your Achilles tendon, injuries to your, you know, plantar fasciitis. That's another.
To the bottom of your foot.
Yeah, that's a big one that really stops people.
Some people give up altogether after getting that.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. So I think you just have to pay attention to what your body is telling you. And even if you're in the middle of a hard workout that you have planned because you have a big race coming up, like I had somebody last night, and all of a sudden her calf just like seized up and she did the smart thing. She quit. She stopped the workout, mm-hmm. you know. And then the next step, of course, is I told her, you need to get in to see this person right away to have this taken care of. So sending her to a PT to have it taken care of right away.
Mm.
So the sooner you can get in after an injury to the two things I really like are active release. That's really great for injuries, and dry needling. Both those seem to work really well on soft tissue injuries, but you got to start it as soon as you can.
You hear people say, well, I had to give up running because my joints or my knees or, mm-hmm. you know, there is a certain sell-by date on the human body. I get the impression that if you are a very avid runner and do a lot of distance, though some people it doesn't seem to happen,
mm-hmm.
you're going to sort of wear parts out. Is that true?
No. The studies actually show that there was a really long, I think it was a 40-year study on male runners. I think it concluded in the late 1990s or early 2000s. And the men who ran all of those years actually had better joint health than the men who didn't. And
okay.
a lot of it is because the men who ran didn't put on weight as they got older.
Mm-hmm.
And putting on weight as you get older is going to be the number one reason why your joints are going to start to bother you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more work, you know. But there's also going to be those people who have some congenital issue or some genetics that are bad, you know, that might wear, you know, I have a friend who had a hip replacement at 39 and a very active guy.
Right.
So, you know, there's always that too. But for the general population, exercising and even running is the best thing you can do for your your body.
And running will build up the strength of your bones. So when
Absolutely.
You get older, they won't be brittle. Because you've that impact. And
yep.
if you think about what happens to astronauts when they're in space, mm-hmm. weightlessness, their mm-hmm. bones get weak, right?
Yep.
On Earth, you want more impact
right.
to have stronger bones over time.
Exactly. I always go back to the Born to Run book and the book called Why We Run, which is a really great book. And we were meant to run. We weren't meant, you know, to lay on a couch.
Yeah.
And we were meant to run and do long walks. And I think our faithful companion, the dog, is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were all meant to do that. So most people can run. You just have to be smart about it. And if you're coming in with extra weight, you have to be extra smart about it. And you might have to do some other things first to maybe even lose some weight in some other ways before you can really start a really serious running program if you want to decrease your chance of injury.
Right. The other thing, if you read a book and it says, you know, everybody should be running on their toes, and you're already a runner, don't start running on your toes.
Exactly.
Yeah, keep running the same way you run.
Yep.
that was a fad, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, we do see some benefit to being more towards the front of your foot, but people started to go kind of tippy-toe, and
mm-hmm.
that was a little bit of a problem. So you just had more injuries related to that. There is something to be said with, though, that we... You know, our foot isn't meant to be encased in a shoe, you
mm-hmm.
know, not the original design, at least. And that maybe the shoe has had some impact on our ability to run without injury or fewer injuries because the shoe has like really changed our foot. And I really like to say the example of if you look at National Geographic and you look at you'll see a picture of some people in Indonesia on a fishing boat and they have big, thick feet. And you look at some African tribe and they have big, thick feet and they're muscled and they have lots of calluses. And then you look at, you know, most of the first world and we have these little thin feet
mm-hmm.
That have been just jammed into shoes. And so they're just not as strong to support us.
What about running shoes? What kind of running shoes should you choose? I've sort of started going down a skinny raven because there'll be people there who can actually give me some advice on what kind of running I do rather than walking into somewhere in the mall.
Exactly.
And then how frequently to replace the shoes.
So that I think Skinny Raven is the perfect place to go. They're experts. They know what kind of shoe they can put you in, depending on what kind of problems you've had before, too, and what your history is, how much you weigh, mm-hmm. how much, you know, you run. So replacing the shoe is all dependent on that as well. But the most recent studies I've seen on shoes is you need to put the shoe on that feels the best. And so you might need to test a lot of shoes. And it's great. Okay. At Skinny Raven, they have a treadmill, so you mm-hmm. can get on there and run. And you just don't even worry about the price, is what the study said. Just try a number of different shoes. The one that feels the best is the one that you should have.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. That's simple.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you a little bit about this Running Free Alaska program mm-hmm. that you're involved in, but any other sort of injury prevention tips that we didn't cover that you think are important?
I think the biggest thing is you got to listen to your body and get treated right away if you want to keep going, mm-hmm. and nothing too soon, too fast, too long.
Yeah. So we'll be talking about some of those treatment issues and treatment options in the second half of the show. But tell me about Running Free Alaska. This is mm-hmm. where you're taking incarcerated mm-hmm. women only?
Women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At Highland Prison.
Yeah. And what are you doing with them?
So this program started about 5 years ago. Tim Alderson started it. He was an intern out at Highland in mental health, and he decided to he had read an article in Runner's World about a program in Kansas that did the same thing with women prisoners and how it improved their health, just their environmental health, their social health, their physical health, and their mental health. And so he tested them on those four aspects before and after and saw an amazing change in all of those markers by the end of it was a 12-week program. I got involved sort of in the middle of that, and so I've been involved almost from the beginning of that. And so now we run two sessions a year. We have a fall session, a summer session that ends with a race in the fall. And then we have a spring session, which we're in now, which ends May 6th with a race. We have a 5 and a 10K race in the spring. And then the fall, we actually have a 5 and a 10K and a half marathon.
Just and among the women in the prison?
It's just the women in the prison. Wow. Yeah. And so we train them for that. There's all volunteer coaches that come out and train them 3 days a week. Uh-huh. We meet with them. And we have, they get a pair of shoes and they get a jog bra, which is super, super important. And it was kind of funny because in the beginning it was just shoes because it was Tim kind of driving it.
And he didn't know it.
Yeah. He didn't realize really how important that was. He knows now. But uh-huh. So that is super important. And it's just been amazing because last week we went out, the runners had a little party for all the coaches,
oh,
and
nice.
They got up and gave their testimony about how important this program was to them, and many of them in tears, because by and large, a majority of them have not had easy lives,
yeah.
you know, from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the program, the running program and the orchestra are the two places where they can go and they're not a problem. You know, they're everything else, they're in some treatment program. They're trying to, you know, change the way they live, all these things. There's some sort of problem, but they can just come and be who they are in mm-hmm. those two programs. And many of them got up and said, this is the most important program here for me because
wow.
it's something I do for myself and something I never thought I could do. And I think that's the power of running. That's
and you can
power.
Get better, and you have a goal.
And you have yeah. a goal. You have all this goal setting. I mean, a lot of, you know, there's a problem with gaining weight in prison
mm-hmm.
because food's not great, and it's high calorie but low, not very nutritious.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see a big weight loss from a lot of people. You just see there's just a culture that's built up over it over the last 5 years where they are just work hard, and they give people who aren't working hard a hard time, which mm-hmm. is really great to see too.
It's neat.
It's
only
fantastic.
For the women though.
Yeah. Highland Prison is a woman's prison.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So there's nothing comparable yet at any of the other prisons here. And it's not funded by mm-hmm. DOC at all.
Right.
You know, it's all private donations.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Lisa. Lisa Keller has been my guest. She has Multisport Training of Alaska. And as you heard, does a lot of other stuff too, and quite a competitor. And you can find out about Lisa's business on the web. We'll have a link on our website at alaskapublic.org or outdoorexplorer.org. Thanks for being with us, Lisa.
Well, thanks for having me, Charles.
Well, stay with us. In the second half, we're going to talk about recovering from injuries. You didn't follow Lisa's advice, so now you need help. And so that's our topic coming up as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolfworth, and our topic today is injury prevention and recovery. We're thinking mostly about the kind of injuries you get from working out, from fitness, running, and all the other stuff, focusing mostly on spring and summer, since that's where we're season we're going into now. Certainly a lot of other kinds of injuries we could talk about, like falling down in the ski hill or drowning or whatever, but we're sort of more focused on the athletic type injuries. And so for this second half, we're assuming you failed to follow the advice from the first half and you've got a problem, or if you did have a problem, what would you do? And our guest to talk about that is Alec Kay. Alec is a physical therapist with United Physical Therapy and a mountain runner who does some long races. Thanks for being with us, Alec.
Thank you, Charles. I'm excited to talk about this.
Yeah, for sure. And we were talking, you know, just to start off with, we were talking with Lisa Keller in the first half. If you are running and you suddenly, your calf suddenly hurts or you have some other injury like that that appears, I mean, one of her pieces of advice is like, don't ignore it. Do something about it.
Yes, I completely agree with Lisa, and she has a lot of experience working with runners over the last several decades. And one of the best ways to speed up your recovery is to identify it immediately and make changes, because most of the more chronic injuries are because people are trying to work through them, kind of in denial about what's going on, and they do a few more workouts or a few more miles, and that's really when things get worse. And so if you can nip it early, it makes a huge difference in terms of your recovery. So I agree.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, but there's some things that can happen to you where it maybe is what they might call a twinge, or it's not like really an injury. I mean,
right.
Sometimes you'll have a little bit of pain in a calf and, well, it does work out. So how do you know?
No, it's a good question, because if you stopped every time you felt a little twinge or tweak, you know, you wouldn't get far. And so the kind of rule of thumb that I use is, you know, if you feel something creep on during activity, you know, it's okay to ignore it unless it's affecting the way you move. So if it's making you limp, you probably need to stop what you're doing and kind of reassess. Otherwise, I typically advise people to give it a few minutes and just see what happens. And hopefully it'll just fade away and just be a memory. But if it affects the way you move, or if during your workout it's coming on earlier, like if we use running, for example, just because it's an easy thing to use, if you used to have some symptom in your calf that came on at 2 miles and now it's coming on at 1 mile and lasting, and then it's coming on at a half mile, then that's a sign that it's something more serious and it's progressing. And so you probably need to modify what you're doing so that it doesn't become more of a full-blown injury and really shut you down.
Mm-hmm.
And something I really like to emphasize is modifying, you know, not stopping, but just modifying. And so that means cross-training or decreasing some variable of that exercise, whether it be speed, duration, intensity, you know, and trying to break it down so that you can maintain fitness, activity, but not worsen your problem.
Right. So it sounds like you see a lot of athletes, folks that are like me, not really can't call themselves athletes, but people are into fitness. And what sort of things do they normally present when they come in to see you?
Well, it does depend on the season to some degree. And by the way, Charles, you are an athlete in my book, so so that's good. But, you know, this time of year is certainly people transitioning from what used to be our winter sports, more skiing, ice skating, snow biking now, into running, hiking, more weight-bearing activities. And so this time of year, you know, the main problems we see would be Achilles injuries, plantar fasciitis, all different sorts of tendonitis in the lower limbs, like iliotibial band tendonitis, patellar tendonitis. So those types of injuries would be what we're looking at.
Those are mostly inflammation is what you're talking about, right?
Essentially, any injury is going to be accompanied by some kind of inflammation.
Okay.
Tendonitis, you know, that's a hallmark of that injury.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good way to determine whether or not you have an injury or just some tightness. If there's inflammation, you have an injury pretty much. Unless you have an interruption to your to your venous system or blood flow somehow. Inflammation is a cardinal sign of injury and something that shouldn't be ignored. And I bring this up because...
Which we mean swelling, redness.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. Swelling, redness, warmth. And I bring this up because this time of year comes with its own set of hazards in terms of, you know, the days are getting longer, the snow is melting, people's energy levels are soaring.
Yeah.
They're excited about the coming summer. And it's easy to fall into a pattern of denial when you start to have symptoms. And so the importance on identifying and acknowledging that you have something that you need to deal with is crucial in terms of keeping it from getting really serious.
Help me understand the difference of when you want to go to an orthopedic doctor and when you want to go to a physical therapist.
Well, without question, you should always go to a physical therapist. No, okay. I'm kidding. I really am kidding. I think that, you know, a physical therapist is a professional who's trained in musculoskeletal evaluation and movement analysis. And so they're great at dealing with things that are essentially non-surgical. Of course, you don't know that as a patient. But I think that, you know, for the nagging injuries that are slowing down and interrupting your workout, a physical therapist who can do a really thorough musculoskeletal exam and use, you know, good clinical problem-solving skills is a great place to start to get practical advice. If things aren't following an expected course of improvement, the physical therapist would certainly refer you to an orthopedist, and there's nothing wrong with starting with an orthopedist, but if it's not a typical surgical type of case, you'll probably end up either with following the advice of the orthopedist in terms of activity changes, or end up at a physical therapist. And so it's not an easy call all the time, but you know, if you've got something serious, traumatic, orthopedist, or very persistent. But otherwise, physical therapists can do an excellent job helping mm-hmm. with really practical advice.
So if you've got one of these problems, like you were mentioning the plantar fasciitis or tendonitis, mm-hmm. and you just decide, well, I'm just going to wait it out, or I'm just going to lower my activity level, I'm not going to go to a physical therapist, as opposed to going and getting treatment, what is the time difference in terms of when you might be able to actually get back to your full range of activities?
Right. So that is going to vary depending on the specific injury mm-hmm. and some other factors related to that injury. But, you know, what a physical therapist can help you with, and by the way, your first approach is a sound one. If you are willing to back off and wait it out, generally people will recover. The problems that I've seen is that people will do that inadequately, or they'll come back too soon.
Boy, that has happened to me so many times, right?
Yeah.
And, well, it's feels pretty much better, and
right.
then you heard it worse than before, and it ends up going on and on and on.
Right, right. And that's a pattern mm-hmm. that we see that leads to a lot of chronic tendon problems. And, you know, when tendon problems become chronic, they just become a lot more sticky and mm-hmm. difficult to work with. So, you know, physical therapists, not only can they help you identify any biomechanical faults that may have predisposed you to this injury, but they can give you excellent guidelines in terms of activity progression, which is really the key to coming back all the way and not having re-injuries along the way. So, you know, the specific time frame, there are some studies comparing injuries with and without physical therapy, and physical therapy will always outperform someone who doesn't get help. But the biggest thing is I think the thoroughness of the recovery is better because you'll be more strengthened sort of around your injury. You'll be able to train at a higher level in terms of cross training and other ideas like that. And hopefully you'll deal with the issue that caused the primary problem and not have a re-injury from that perspective.
Right. So you mentioned biomechanical
faults.
Yeah.
I think the word I use.
Is that like improving your technique or something in terms of running, or what does it mean?
Technique would be part of it, but it might be because, you know, you sprained your ankle 3 or 4 years ago or a decade uh-huh. ago, and you have stiffness in your ankle, or you have decreased strength in your calf in this case, or it may have affected hip strength. And so it's basically changing the way you're moving in some subtle way that from a cumulative standpoint with your activity becomes an injury. And so if we can identify that with our examination and our analysis of movement, then, you know, while the injury is healing, we can work on correcting the problem that led to the injury in the first place. And so, it could be a huge list of things in terms of weakness, tightness,
right.
Some lingering problem from some other injury, or just some imbalance.
Do some therapists specialize more in athletic issues and others more with other types of injuries?
Yes. The physical therapy profession works across a really broad spectrum, from pediatrics to geriatrics to neurology to hands, mm-hmm. to burns. And some physical therapists gravitate toward sporty types of things. So yes, there's different specialties, just like in any sort of medical profession.
So you'd maybe get a referral from your primary care doc or something like that?
Yeah, and it's not required in the state of Alaska to have a referral from a provider to see a physical therapist. However, your insurance company may require it. For example, all Medicare patients require a doctor's referral to see a physical therapist, but you can go directly to a physical therapist without seeing a doctor, based on our practice act, mm-hmm. in this state. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about some therapies that you actually use. And Lisa mentioned two, and rather than have her tell us what they were, I thought, mm-hmm. well, we've got Alec coming in. He can tell us what they are. She mentioned active release therapy and dry needling.
Yeah.
Both of which sound not totally obvious on the face of it what they are.
Right. So, yeah, active release therapy is it's a soft tissue mobilization technique, which I guess would be sort of like a massage, but it's very specific to individual muscles based on the findings of the therapist. This is a treatment that's done a lot by physical therapists, chiropractors, some massage therapists, and it's just a very specific approach to doing massage that incorporates movement and sort of a functional approach to loosening things up. I don't feel like I can completely do it justice in terms of explaining it, although I've been the recipient of it and I am a proponent of it. Dry needling is a technique used, again, by more than just physical therapists, but it's the use of a solid core needle and to deactivate trigger points or stimulate healing based on our musculoskeletal examination.
So that sounds similar to acupuncture.
The only similarity is that the tool is the same. The philosophy is completely different. Acupuncturists have extensive training in Eastern medicine approach. And, you know, if you go to see an acupuncturist for an elbow problem, they're going to look at you from a much broader standpoint in terms of how they're going to treat you with their needles, where a physical therapist will do a broad examination, but the use of the needles is much more specific and designed more to treat sort of the elbow rather than the broader person. Acupuncturists treat all kinds of medical problems, allergies, infertility, and, you know, we're just focusing on the musculoskeletal aspects, and we focus just on needling the muscles specifically.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking today about athletic injury prevention and recovery, and right now we're in the recovery portion talking with Alec Kay, who is a physical therapist with United Physical Therapy here in town, works with a lot of athletes, and is a mountain runner himself. What is the, looking for the right word for this, but why does massage or the types of massage-like techniques you're talking about, mm-hmm. why does that help?
Well, it really depends on the presentation specifically, mm-hmm. but if we take an example of, I can give you an example of dry needling. When you have an injury, like we'll say you strain your calf, that means that if you looked under a microscope at the connective tissue that makes up the calf, and there's muscles and then an envelope around the muscle cells that's essentially made of collagen, so you're going to see an actual tear there. And then in a reaction to that injury and pain, you'll have regions in the body that will sort of tense up and guard and protect to a degree that slows down your healing. So there's a protective mechanism that can become counterproductive. And so massage, dry needling, for example, active release, can inhibit some of these guarded patterns so that you can get more normal movement and you can get more normal dosage of stress into the injury and not have excessive tension in the area. That's one really simplistic explanation of how it can work. There's other examples of where trigger points themselves can cause pain directly, and just by inhibiting them with massage or dry needling or other modalities, you can decrease pain, which enables people to move more normally, and then their joints essentially function better. So, you know, when you're looking at active release, dry needling, massage, that's sort of a very narrow explanation of what they have mm-hmm. to offer, but it does give you an idea of what they can do.
Right, right. Yeah. So one thing I've often heard about physical therapy is that you go for your appointment mm-hmm. and then you're usually given something you're supposed to do at home.
Yes.
And that the compliance level for what you do at home is often a problem. And I'm just interested in like how the home part works mm-hmm. with the office part and how you deal with that.
Well, I can really only speak for myself. And I think that, you know, the prescription of home exercises is a real skill, and it takes a lot of thought and experience to do in a way where you have success. But what you're going for is activities that can be used throughout the day, every day, and not just happen in the physical therapy clinic. And so home exercises generally are an extremely important part of rehabilitation, and having, you know, a really good connection, I think, and sort of therapeutic relationship and alliance with the practitioner and the patient allows you to understand, okay, this person's pretty busy. I'm just going to ask him to do two things. And that way they're going to have success because they mm-hmm. can do the two things. You know, if they're prescribed 10 things, you know, they may not do any of them. And so I personally feel that, you know, the compliance or adherence to home exercises is pretty good if you're really paying attention and listening to your patient and you're trying to be on target in terms of what they can do. But there's no question in my mind that it's a crucial part of recovery because, you know, there's all those hours that you're not with the physical therapist where you could be doing things that are positive for your injury.
Give us an example of what kind of exercise would you be doing at home and how it would benefit a particular problem.
Right. So that could be, you know, many different things. But if we take, you know, one of the common injuries that I mentioned earlier, we'll say like a hamstring strain from someone who started running who hadn't been used to it. Common home exercises might just be some sort of cross training. So this is somebody who just runs and just loves to run, but you're going to ask them to do something different. Like, for example, sit on a bicycle and pedal. And just that lengthening and shortening of the muscle is going to be stimulating the injury in order to help it get better. You may have them do some eccentric type of exercise, which is kind of a lengthening of the muscle to stimulate the fibroblasts, which are cells within the collagen where the injury has happened, and stimulate them in a way to actually repair the collagen. And so you may have them, there's, you know, depending on their degree of acuity, you can go a lot of directions in terms of an eccentric exercise, but basically an exercise that will generate a little bit of tension into the area that's injured, but not enough tension to exceed the tolerance that collagen can handle. Because then you would have a re-injury and more pain. Mm. And the precise dosage and prescription of that exercise is really where the art and science come together in terms of having that optimal exercise approach. And so, you know, strained hamstring, part of your home exercises are going to be riding a bike. Part of it are going to be doing this eccentric exercise. Part of it's going to be strengthening your hip because that was part of the initial injury. Part of it's going to be strengthening your calf or loosening your calf because that was affecting your gait. And so, you know, those are examples, but it's a far reaching evaluation that's going to lead you down that road.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because it seems like it's a very personal practice where you need to develop something of an empathetic connection with your patient so that you get where they're coming from and they need to like you so they trust what you have to say.
Yeah, without question. I was talking about this last night with some colleagues, and the ability to really listen and make that connection is imperative to having a healing relationship. And, you know, it doesn't matter how well trained you are or what kind of skills you have, if you don't have the ability to really listen and connect and meet people sort of eye to eye on what their goals are, you're never going to have success.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, most physical therapists are by nature pretty happy, amiable, and friendly people who are good listeners and connect well with people.
Yeah, I think you need a little bit of a nurturing personality to be able to do it. Yeah,
I think you're absolutely right.
So I'm interested in whether you see different kinds of injuries by the age of the patient. I know that as we grow older, you know, we get much more prone to injury from athletics, and I don't know if the types of injuries are the same or if they change, and if there's any particular age-related tips that you would have.
There's definitely an increase in injury as the decades go by, and there's a lot of different factors that lead to that. Some of them are physiological in terms of changes in elasticity in your collagen and blood flow to different structures, but there's also a lot of other factors, social factors, such as, you know, when you were a teenager in your 20s, you might have had more time to be active.
Mm-hmm.
You might have spent more time, exercising and just playing. And now you're sitting at a desk, you know, 40 or 50 hours a week, and you're more of kind of a weekend warrior. So that's a major, major factor in terms of increased injuries with age. And the other is, you know, people tend to learn exercise techniques when they are younger, you know, high school, sometimes college, and a lot of times they just stick with them until they stop working. And, you know, you can't necessarily, you know, roll off the couch in the spring and start playing softball and sprint down the first baseline when you've been just working all winter and not staying active, even though that's what you did when you were 16. And so I always tell people, you know, your performance can be amazing, you know, as the decades go by, but your training really has to change. It has to be much more consistent, and it has to be much smarter as you transition from one activity to another, or if you're trying to increase your activity. You need more time to make transitions and increase things as the decades go by. I think there was another question that you had.
Well, I think you touched on it very well. I mean, and I'm curious though that it seems to me like as when you're younger, and maybe this is what you're talking about in terms of the training, but when you're younger, you can sprint a lot better, and when you get older, sort of your endurance gets better. And I don't know if that's psychological or if it's physical.
Well, I don't think it's physical, and I don't think it's psychological. I think it sort of comes out of necessity, because if you think about the act of sprinting, it's a very powerful, high intensity activity that requires your collagen to be very strong and elastic to be able to deal with those kinds of levels of tension. And so, you know, if you're 50, 60, it's not the common 50 or 60 year old who does that kind of training where they do sprinting. And so they lose that ability. I mean, some of it happens physiologically, but some of it happens because it's just not a part of what they do. You know, 16-year-olds are jumping out of trees and they do it for fun because it feels good. And so, you know, when you lose that stress on your system, you know, you no longer have it. And so you tend to slow down and you do things kind of more gradually, and it becomes more rewarding. And maybe that's what you want out of your exercise as you get older, and as opposed to the higher intensity things. And so you certainly will find, you know, if you look at sprinters versus marathon runners, you know, you'll find a lot more older people doing marathon runners, but I think it's also sort of the lifestyle. Not that they couldn't sprint, but it's just not really what they're looking for.
The values may have changed a little
bit.
Their way of life.
I think, again, the psychosocial factors, I think, play into it along with the physiological.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I wanted to, you touched on this a little bit at the beginning, but I think it's worth focusing on, which is the emotions that are attached to having an injury when a big part of your life is regular exercise. The frustration is just can be overwhelming. And for a lot of us, our moods are partly modulated by the fact that we get exercise. It cheers
Certainly.
Us up, you know. And so then we can't do it. You're bummed that you can't do it. And you're bummed because your body is sort of giving you different signals. But some of these injuries, like plantar fasciitis, which you mentioned, which is this foot injury, mm-hmm. you need to lay off it for a really long time, right? So how do you deal with that in terms of your practice?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's one of the more challenging things in terms of dealing with athletes and people who have been using exercise as a major part of their lifestyle, whether it's for mental health reasons or stress relief or social reasons. I deal with many injured adults and younger people who it's sort of their identity. And, you know, something seemingly benign as plantar fasciitis can send people on a significant spiral in terms of their happiness and their well-being on all levels of their health. And so I think, you know, it sort of takes one to know one in terms of working right. with these kinds of people, because I think if you don't have that experience, the common advice that, you know, you may get from, you know, your family practitioner or even an orthopedist is just simply, well, stop running. You know, there's no big mystery here. It hurts when you run, you know, stop running. But
right.
for a lot of people, that's a major deal. You know, now they mm-hmm. don't have their buddies to hang out with on the weekend. They don't have their stress relief. And so to deal with that, you absolutely have to try to build psychological flexibility into transitioning into something else. And the trouble is when someone's only a runner or a walker and it's just not tolerated because of their injury, but they don't have the psychological flexibility to get on a bike or get in a pool. And even though that's not what they want to do, mm-hmm. it's what they need to do. And eventually people usually get there, but it can be a struggle because you can see it in their eyes. You can say, well, it's really important to keep your activity level up for all these reasons, but it's not going to be your most favored choice of activity. I'm going to suggest you do some lower impact things. And they just sort of give you that look like, but it's not running. You know, the fact is it can't be running right now. And so right. it, you know, the degree that people can deal with this from a psychological standpoint depends on their ability to sort of go with the flow for a period of time. And, you know, when they understand that your goals are their goals to get them back to activity, usually they'll sort of get on board with you and take your advice. And
it's like going with the flow. It's good advice anyway.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, thanks so much. This has been a very informative hour for me, and I've really enjoyed it. Alec Kay, who is with me from United Physical Therapy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Charles. I enjoyed it.
In the first half, we heard from Lisa Keller of Multisport Training of Alaska. That's all for today's show. Our producer is Eric Bork. Grace Bojean lines up our guests, and she did a great job of that today. My name is Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.